Let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. Newcomers, is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. You can chat with the hosts. You can raise your little blue hand. You can wave at the screen. Jump up and down. Okay, I don't see any. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous states that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So, normally the format of this meeting is an open big book study. We invite two speakers in each week, and we read paragraphs pre-selected out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we have our two invited speakers share their experience, strength, and hope on that step. And so it takes us about 13 weeks to go through 12 steps, and then we have what's called a supper and a speaker event. And that's where we are tonight. And given the current state of affairs, where we all had supper, I hope. And about 6 months ago, before all this began, we asked Nathan I from Richmond to come down and share his experience, strength, and hope, tell his story from the podium. And I just appreciated that he's kind enough to come and do it here on the Zoom. And so I'm really, truly excited. I have not heard your whole hour yet, but I love this man. He's a good member of a home group, a solid AA. I know he's working with other people, and I'm excited to hear your story. Nathan, take it away, my brother.
Thank you. I didn't know if we were reading steps or doing any of that, so I thought I had a few more minutes of prayer to prep me. Thank you, David, so much for asking. And, you know, I was so excited when you asked me, however long ago. Time has been so weird the last few months, but I was very excited. I love y'all's home group. If there is anyone here that is new or coming back, whatever, when I came into AA and the first time I got here was in 2016. Actually, let me introduce myself before I get into all that. My name is Nathan Isaacs, and I am an alcoholic. Through God's grace, through the practice of the 12 steps, a spiritual experience through the practice of them, I have not had a drink or a drug since August 16th, 2017. And it has been a gift that I didn't even know that I needed. I was the last person on the planet to know that I was an alcoholic and had alcoholism. So I'm eternally grateful for strong sponsorship, a strong home group, all of that. I have a sponsor. Her name is Valerie. We actually came down there, I think it was last year, I don't know when, and spoke on the second step. And I love y'all's group so much, which is what I was about to say. There is anyone new or coming back in or whatever, grab someone that's in this group. I mean, these are people that are armed with the facts of themselves. They have an understanding of what alcoholism is and what it is not, and more importantly, a solution to this malady. When I came into AA, I came here for the first time in 2016. I just gotten a DUI. So let's be real, like every TV show, sitcom, crime show, whatever, you're kind of aware of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I just thought it might be a place to go check out. I truly did want to be sober. You know, I really did. Because the DUI and jail were like two things that terrified me about my drinking. Early on, you hear people in the rooms talk about, you know, we set lines in the sand and we cross them and whatever. And the one real line that I had set in the sand was, I really never want to drink and drive. By the third time I was drinking, a Four Loko driving down 64. So I threw that one out, and I never really set many standards or rules or conditions around drinking or not drinking, because I knew I couldn't keep them. But anyway, so I was aware of AA. I don't come from any alcoholics. The first drunk person I ever saw in my life was myself. So this behavior, this malady, this whatever, this wasn't something I learned. It truly was instinctual, though. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But I came into AA in 2016 after a DUI, and I was terrified. I was talking to someone about this recently. I've cried, not much of a crier, not there's anything wrong or whatever. Cried twice in 4 years. Once was at a sponsee's funeral. I just wept like a baby the whole time. One of the most heartbreaking experiences of my life, but in the same respect, got to be of service to him and to his family. A lot of them do suffer from alcoholism, and a lot of them still reach out to me to this day. Even helped one of them get into treatment, which was awesome. But and then right after my DUI, I remember the first thing I did after, when I got home from jail, well, I took a bong rip. But after my bong rip in Taco Bell, I went into the shower and just cried. So I went to AA. Didn't know anything about it, alcoholism, any of that. I have one cousin that's real bad alcoholic. I call it like I see it. I hear people say all the time in the rooms, you can't really diagnose someone's alcoholism. The book says we don't like to pronounce any individual's alcoholic. It doesn't say we don't do it. Now, I know I can tell someone, so I'm blue in the face, that they have alcoholism. And, we don't hear until we hear, see until we can see. But he has the same condition that I have. We always, every time we drank, we were on the same level. Inability to stop, stay stopped, inability to control his drinking. So he went to AA, so I had a little bit of knowledge, not much, but, he's had like 4 DUIs. He's, he lost a potential professional baseball career through drinking. I mean, all this stuff that I believe was alcoholism. So I went to AA, and the message that I heard was just don't drink. Put the plug in the jug, kid, and, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And, I didn't stay sober. Maybe I was ready, maybe not. I don't know. But I do know two things have to happen. Someone has to be willing and ready. And there has to be someone there carrying a message of depth and weight and of hope, a sufficient substitute for the drink, for the drug, whatever it is. And that I just didn't find that there. But I actually went back to that meeting because I was desperate for an answer. I knew that I couldn't stay stopped on my own. I knew that I couldn't control my and enjoy my drinking. I knew a lot of that stuff long before I had words to put to it. So I went back to the meeting, same thing. And it was in the suburbs around Richmond, and I biked like 5 miles to get to that meeting. And, I go to a lot of meetings. I mean, obviously not right now, but, if I go to like my home group, my home group is the Jaywalkers group. It's not in an urban area. So if someone comes biking up to the group, I know they've probably had a DUI. I'm definitely going to make myself available to them or her. That didn't happen there. I raised my hand. I said, it's my very first meeting ever. I identified as an alcoholic. And like I said, the only, other than a lot of people talking about what kind of day they had, they just said, don't drink. And the solution to my problem is not abstinence. I am absolutely powerless over my sobriety without some type of power greater than self. I have sworn off forever. I have said it will be different this time. I have put many obstacles between me and a drink, and I always found myself drunk. So this thing that I have, this condition, it is, like I said, I mean, the doctor's opinion, when it says the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence, I mean, as I perceive that, it's really talking about the physical aspects of alcoholism, which is just one part. I do sponsor a lot of men and women, and I ask them, especially right out of treatment, what is alcoholism? And I get the most common answer I get is, well, I can't control my drinking. And yeah, that's definitely a part of it, but I can't stay comfortably sober. I can't stay stopped. All I can think about when I stop drinking is drinking. And that's what the obsession of the mind looks like for me. There is some of it that is very much, how can I get away with this? What combinations? I'm a vodka drinker. I love vodka. It's my shit, I've always been a liquor drinker for the most part, but I'll try drinking some beer. That's an obsession of the mind. Maybe if I drink beer, I won't get any consequences, whatever. But truly what the obsession of the mind looks like for me is all that I can think about when I'm not drinking is drinking. And if I know relief is coming, I'm going to be okay. I remember at my last job, and I lost my job. I worked at Martin's up here, and they went out of business in the Richmond area. And I remember when my last year of drinking was atrocious. Things that if you had asked me 10, 15 years ago, what is an alcoholic? I was doing those things my last year of drinking. Drinking before work and, getting booze on the clock, like all that stuff. I would do drugs on the job and I'd always, give myself a pat on the back, like, ha, I'm not drinking, But anyways, I remember I got off at 9:00. I'm in the car drinking, chugging vodka on the car ride home by 9:05. And if someone, God forbid, was running late or wanted to do, if I had to stay any bit past 9:00, I would just destroy you. I would rip your head off, even if I loved you, even if you're one of my favorite coworkers. That's just, how desperately I need relief. So this thing that I have, this condition that I have, like I said, it's not abstinence, didn't do it for me. I tried that. My shelf life is about 2 weeks. I can pull it off for about 2 weeks. And what that essentially looks like is I'm just laying in bed, I'll call out of work, counting, shooting to midnight, that's my absolute best that I can do without some power, without something greater than self, or without some of the tools that we are given in AA, before we're able to have a spiritual experience. So, I'll just kind of go back. I'm the poster child of ADHD, and I kind of jump and bounce around all over the place. And, before I signed on here, I just asked God to flow through me and to prepare my heart, prepare the heart of everyone here. And just, I hope that y'all can hear what's in my heart, because these principles have absolutely saved my life. Like I said, I don't grow up in an alcoholic home, but I know for sure that I had alcoholism at a very young age. I mean, I have always been restless, irritable, and discontent. I am never satisfied with the circumstances, with my surrounding, with the circumstances of my life. Like, my constant train of thought is, there is just something not quite right. There is just something I need to find or grab, or some human power to discard or to grab hold of that is going to make me whole and make me okay. And then when it comes to other people, they must know something that I don't know. They are doing something in life that I'm not doing. What is it? My God. Like, I found a lot of relief in fantasy and fiction. I love comic books, and anything I've ever enjoyed in life, I do it alcoholically, which means I'm excessive. If it makes me feel good, I don't stop. And, one is, too many, a thousand's never enough. And I get the thing that I think I need, and as soon as I get it, I don't need it anymore. It doesn't work anymore. It would be better at a different time. It would be better with different combinations. But I definitely got lost in books and reading and all, different sorts of things. And so at a young age, I was truly was waiting for the mothership. I mean, I know speakers talk about that all the time, because I don't belong on this planet. I'm different than everyone around me. I could be in a room full of clones of myself, and I still do not feel a part of. In my family, with friends, there is just some barrier between me and others. So all of that is what I brought into drinking. I was pissed when I got to 12 and an owl didn't show up at my door with a congratulations, you're going to Hogwarts letter. I just knew that there was something I didn't know or whatever. I mean, little did I know it's this spiritual malady. I started drinking late in AA terms, from most people that I sponsor and people that I hear and see, whatever. But even before I picked up a drink, I mean, that's the internal unmanageability that I was experiencing before I ever even picked up a drink. I absolutely needed to drink at probably 3. I was diagnosed with stomach ulcers at 5, and they were saying it's stress related. My parents were like, he doesn't have any stress. I mean, great parents, loving parents. I got everything I could have needed and a lot of what I wanted, and it just was never enough. Just couldn't shut my mind off, and I did all different types of things to try. So, you know, I when I discovered like suicide, that's at, you know, sixth grade, fifth grade, the suicidal ideation started coming, the obsessive thoughts of dying when I found out that was a thing. I'm writing suicide notes. I'm cutting myself. And this is long before I ever put anything mood or mind altering into my body. I don't know why, but because again, this was not learned behavior, but I became obsessed with drinking before I ever even drank. I always wanted to be a drinker. Other than alcoholism, I don't know where this comes from. Up until like I turned about 22, 23, you did not drink at family functions. They're not drinkers. They don't drink. My great grandfather died of alcoholism, and I think a lot of my family was aware of that, so they just never drank, you know? Anyways, in sixth, seventh grade, I'm, you know, going to the neighbors' garages and stealing beer, just one or two here and there, never enough to experience the effects produced. I don't know why I'm doing it, you know. Maybe I think it's cool. I grew up in a Southern Baptist household, which is a little oppressive, and, you know, drinking drugs are not good, and, you know, maybe the taboo aspect of it is what drew me to it. I don't know. I don't spend too much time in that, you know, because I know what alcoholism is. I have a solution. You know, I'm never enough booze to give me any type of effects or relief. The first time I got drunk, I was in high school, 10th or 11th grade. So again, a little bit later than most people. And I remember, I don't know what I ate yesterday. Like I barely know what I did today, you know, to some degree. Well, had a pretty good, crazy day, lost power earlier. Was kind of scrambling, hoping I'd be able to get on here without any trouble. But I remember every single thing about my first drunk. I was wearing a Detroit Pistons sweatshirt. I remember my sister and her friend, the shade of eye makeup she was wearing. I remember looking at the t-shirts and unwrapping the bottles from the blue backpack. I remember everything about that night. So my first drunk, it was, like I said, my sister and her friend, they came over and they swiped something from this girl. Her name is Sammy, not that it matters, from Sammy's parents' liquor cabinet. It was a bottle of Kahlua and a bottle of brandy. So I started, you know, double fisting Kahlua and brandy, wonderful combination. And I blacked out my very first time really having enough booze to do any damage. I blacked out. So from the start, blackout drinker. Recently I saw my sister and she was actually kind of, reminding me of that night of how obliterated I got. And, you know, she had to hide me from my parents, clean my vomit. I mean, just a train wreck. What I really remember that night though, was for the first time in my life, my mind was quiet. The first time in my life, I was effective right here, right now. Are effectively okay right here, right now. I didn't care that I was too short, too skinny, too pale, too gay, any of that stuff. I could breathe. And I never knew that's what I didn't have was just lack of oxygen. You know, I had power failure. So I didn't really chase drinking. Like I said, I grew up in a Southern Baptist household, very strict. David actually spoke at my home group and he talked about woods drinking, and I grew up right outside of a huge swamp and huge wooded area. So I did a lot of deviant activities in the woods, smoking cigarettes, smoking weed, whatever, you know, drinking when I could get it. I had some consequences though in my senior year of high school around weed, and I got grounded forever, and you know, a normal person would say, you know, maybe I should, you know, stop, put up, you know, whatever, maybe slow my roll, whatever. My first thought was like, I'll do what you asked me to do when you're looking, but I cannot wait to do this again. So again, I hadn't been drinking, drugging very long, but I'm already paying a very high price. Not many times I've been drinking or drugging. So 18, I really just start partying, you know, and like I said, with alcoholism, you know, part of it is like, I'm never satisfied with what I have. I always wish that I was someone else, somewhere else, et cetera, et cetera. And I can feel that way in AA. You know, I hear stories and I'm like, damn, that guy, they were a real bad drunk. I feel like I'm an alcoholic light compared to them. Or that one had some amazing drunk stories. My drinking is so boring. So, you know, but it's my experience, and, you know, our liquor is really but a symptom, you know. Anyway, so I just start partying, and my drinking from the outside, it just looks like a 18, 19-year-old just partying. You know, I'm dabbling some drug use, whatever, nothing crazy. I'm always overshooting the mark, but I'm always out drinking everyone. The blackouts are happening, I mean, very early on. Not always, though, but a lot of the times I'm blacking out. And it's just kind of hard partying, you know, hard drinking. You know, I mean, when the big book gives us that description of the moderate drinker, the hard drinker and the real alcoholic, you know, I definitely started out as a hard drinker for sure. And then I crossed that invisible line sometime around 21. I got into a relationship at 19, and I hear a lot of speakers say this, and it's definitely been my experience. You hear speakers talk about a moment in their life when they turn their back on God. In that moment, because I grew up, you know, in a church, not exactly the most, you know, they didn't paint the friendliest, kindest picture of God, but, you know, prayer, meditation, different things. I had some experience with some spiritual principles, but, you know, my ideals about God coming into AA and even today are one of a vengeful, spiteful, angry, punishing, withholding God. I'm so grateful for We Agnostics because it allows me to set aside my mind. It helps me to uncover my agnosticisms. I turned my back on God. The only prayer that I really prayed with earnestness was for God to make me straight, you know? And I, you know, don't talk that much about, you know, all of that. I mean, I'm an alcoholic, you know? I mean, it's cool, whatever. But God didn't answer that prayer, you know, and I was pissed. That was the only thing I wanted. I was talking to a sponsee about this recently. I would sit in my bed, like almost crying, just begging God to make me something that I'm not. My prayer life was extremely rigid as a kid. If someone got sick, I had to pray for them all day, 15 times. And if I miss one of those times, they're going to get sick, and they're going to get sick and go to the hospital. If they go to the hospital, they're going to die. So not exactly a loving relationship with my creator growing up. And so I'm so eternally grateful for AA. How open-handed the God concept is, the God issue as it talks about in We Agnostics. I was able to have a spiritual experience coming from a place of agnosticism / atheism. You know, I was just willing to believe in power and principles and take some actions that I didn't think would work for me through strong sponsorship and the directions in the big book. But Anyway, I get into a relationship around 1920, and that becomes my higher power. I'm able to kind of not drink, not drug for a while because he's an artist. I'm living in a train wreck of a situation, all artists, and I'm the only one with a car or a job. So I'm kind of playing caregiver a little bit. And, you know, that's enough to keep me sober because it's like, sweet, I have friends, I have a relationship. This emptiness in my soul that I have, I can absolutely fill it with a lot of things. And at that time, I wasn't alcoholic enough, or I wasn't, I hate saying bad enough alcoholic, but you know what I mean? I hadn't completely lost all power to choose at that point. So was able to stop. However, I became a kleptomania. I got to find something to fill this emptiness inside. So I'm a train wreck sober. Like when I stop drinking, I do not get better. My life gets increasingly worse. Sometimes on the outside, it looks okay, but internally. You know, the first step when it, you know, I didn't need a step to tell me that I'm a man that can't drink and my life's a wreck. I came into AA, you know, with the, you know, I mean, physical dependency on alcohol, no job, DUI, facing jail time, device in my car I have to blow into anytime I want to, you know, do anything, which really the only places I can drive to are meetings and home. I have a person that tells me where I can go and what time I have to be home. I knew my life was unmanageable. So for me, the first step was really about that internal unmanageability that it beautifully describes all throughout the book, in Doctor's Opinion and Bill's story. I mean, all throughout. So I get out of this relationship because I'm a wreck sober. You know, I don't operate very well without some type of relief in my life. I start stealing. I mean, I've huge financial amends there, and I'm grateful I've you know, gotten to pay back a lot of that stuff. Still working on it, but it became like the drink in some ways. You know, I would go into a store and all I could think about was stealing. I would steal it and I would want more and more and more, and I pulled a Winona Ryder and got banned from Saks Fifth Avenue because I got caught shoplifting, hitting the same place up repeatedly. And I would get it and I wouldn't even wear it. Just I need something to make me feel okay. So, and that's me stark raving sober. Anyway, so I start, this relationship ends and I start drinking. I become a daily drinker, essentially. I stumble upon a burst of manageability and I get a really good career job. And everyone that's looking at my life, and I don't have my big book in front of me, but it talks about in our book, our family and friends hope that, we will ruse ourselves from our lethargy and assert our power of will. But if someone is a real alcoholic, that happy day may not arrive. I'm paraphrasing poorly, but people looking at my life are like, dude, he's a wreck. He's blacking out always. He's puking on perfectly, on just strangers. He's passing out next to dumpsters, this, that, and the other. He has no ambition. He has so much potential. We've all heard that talk. So people were really like kind of hopeful because I got this really good job and I was showing up consistently. Ultimately, what happened though is I just developed a really nasty amphetamine addiction, because I'm not putting down the drink. Hell no. It's the only thing that's keeping me glued together. So I'm living in this great house, got a great car, making tons of money. I'm working 7 days a week, two jobs, trying to fill this emptiness inside with human powers again. This time it was through hard work, through money, through prestige. But alcoholism progresses. And at this time, I physically could not stop drinking. I couldn't stay stopped for maybe more than a week, sometimes two. But again, I'm smoking a lot of weed. I'm doing a lot of other drugs. So I'm at this place for about a year, and then I just walk out and leave. Because, honestly, the true reason, and I gave my family and friends, I gave them the my version of the truth as to why I left. But truly, at this time, I was still a bar drinker. I hated staying out till 2 and waking up and having to snort a line just to get to work. So I go back to work in nights and food and stuff. And, it's perfect for alcoholics. I get off at, between 9 and 11. I go home, black out, wake up, get a little speed in me, and I'm good to go. So nothing really happens between the ages of 21 and 26, and a few things happen. Obviously my drinking is getting worse. My benders are getting longer. The time, the duration where I can drink, and not drink is shrinking. My drug addiction is getting worse. All that different stuff. But no real fireworks, but a few things that did happen that were significant. One, I started drinking alone. If anyone in my life questioned my drinking, they're out. I was tired of hearing it. So my ideal night is some speed, some Morrissey records, some Bowie, some Sabbath, a liter of vodka, and I'm good to go. I don't need to go out and see people. I don't remember when I started drinking alone, but when I did, I was just like, this is great. I don't have to, because I'm a people pleaser. I don't have to buy anyone drinks. I don't have to worry about my conduct. I can just whip it out and pee wherever I like. This is awesome. So that's when my drinking truly just, I absolutely lost all power to choose, when I just started drinking alone because I'm drinking more frequently and all that. Now, if the heat was too heavy with that, like if I'd wake up with the shakes, whatever, I would just switch to benzos, marijuana maintenance, whatever. But I could never just stay physically completely sober. From 20 to 26 daily, something in my system. I was hospitalized. I got really bad bronchitis, which turned into pneumonia. And the doctors couldn't understand. They gave me these antibiotics and they asked me if I was taking them as directed. And, when they would say, you can't drink on this, I don't know how my mind warps it. I know how. It's because I'm an alcoholic, but, I believe that's a suggestion. I believe I can't drink whiskey with my antibiotics. If I just drink 40s, that beer doesn't count. I truly didn't think beer counted as drinking. Just insane when it comes to alcohol. And I love the definition in the big book of insanity, lack of proportion, the inability to think straight. That is absolutely me surrounding the drink. I almost die. My body almost goes septic. It turns into really bad late stage pneumonia. I'm on the floor. I can't see. I go in the hospital and I detox. And, you know, when I get there, my mom has to pick me up and take me. You know, I just figure they're going to give me some medicine and send me on my way. And they're like, no, you need to, you're going to go in like right now. Like if you came in 12 hours later, you may have died. I mean, I was like this close to death. I don't remember much of that because, I completely lost consciousness, almost went comatose. But, I do remember thinking, if I'm in this hospital, how can I drink? That was the only thing I could think of. I didn't care that my mom's crying. You know, I don't care that I'm physically dying. I just care about how am I going to drink. Get out of the hospital and I pick up exactly where I left off. And so that's my drinking, you know? Yeah. And then by this point, every time I drink, I black out. And again, that's why I started drinking alone. And I maybe go out once a month just to, you know, see people because my world gets so small, but I can't even go to the park to walk, you know, my dog with my friends without a liter of vodka in the trunk, you know, get a McDonald's cup and just pour vodka in it. I cannot face life successfully sober anymore. 26, I get a DUI. And you know, it wasn't anything that significant. I mean, essentially I was on a pretty bad, I went on a speed bender and I ran out. So I was just like, I'll just start drinking. And I just woke up and just started drinking all day. And I just passed out. I was just, you know, if you've ever, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of tweakers in the room, but I mean, if you're staying up for days on end and you stop, I mean, you crash. And that's essentially what happened. I was driving home and I ran off the side of the road and, you know, I very well could have died that night, you know. If I was any further, there was a busy intersection. If I was any further, it's a pretty significant ditch that I could have potentially had something really bad happen. Airbags were deployed, all that, this, that, and the other. And the cops came, and I thought I was going to lie my way out. I told them that someone ran me off the road, whatever. And yeah, they took me to jail. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Like two significant memories come to mind. One is, so it's like my DUI, I got it right by. I was living with my mom and dad at this time because I'm not an adult. I'm just a man baby. I was like right by their house and I got my mom, you know, I gave them a lie and told them to come pick me up. Someone ran me off the side of the road. My mom said she knew I was drunk, you know? So I got there and a swarm of cop cars got there and, when I got a lawyer and we went through the body cam to, you know, we were trying to figure out if he could get me off. I watched the cops harass my mother. They accused her of drinking. I'm not doing this story much justice, but I was stark raving sober sitting in my lawyer's office, watching myself get arrested, watching them question my mom and judge her. And it was, I had a moment of clarity. But again, I can't handle that, so I get drunk about it. Then the other was right before I got sober, my friends threw me a surprise birthday, and I think no one loves me, and I don't have anyone in my life, and this, that, and the other. And my friends threw me this awesome surprise party, but I was in the middle of a bender, and they pulled me away from that, and I was pissed. I mean, because if anyone has ever had their drinking interrupted, it is worse. It is like being torn. And two, to start, I had like one, maybe two beers, and my friend picks me up, and it's a surprise party, and they know I'm not legally allowed to be drinking. This is post-DUI. I'm on probation. They're not letting me drink. I'm furious. I have all these people surrounding me with love and all this stuff, and all I can think about is myself. All I can think about is needing a drink. Just one of the lowest points in my life, one of many. So, you know, I get a DUI and I'm on probation. And I essentially, what happens though, like I said, my drinking is getting very bad in terms of what happens when I put alcohol in, phenomenon of craving, all of that, the inability to stop. And I could stay stop a week, maybe two, as long as I could do, you know, drugs, whatever. What happened is I'm being constantly drug tested. So I stopped doing drugs and I become a daily drinker. Waking up shaking. I had no clue what that was. I had no idea that me just waking up, not being able to write, you know, just violently ill until I started drinking again, I had no clue what was happening to me. But daily drinking, getting up at 6:30 before work to drink vodka, all of that. You know, the second I get off work, I have vodka ready to go in the car. So, you know, essentially what happens is I'll sober up, daily drinking, but, you know, I have an interlock in my car and I'm trying to be really careful to be able to get to work, drive, not drive, Uber, just the insanity of how can I control and enjoy this. I kind of had a recipe for how much I could drink, when I could stop, because I work nights. So, you know, if I could stop 15 hours before, you know, I could pass my breathalyzer, or I thought I could. But very quickly after getting that, I get a violation. Essentially what happens is I'm drinking vodka and my sister comes over with a case of beer and phenomenon of craving develops. My recipe is thrown off and I, you know, chug this beer and throws off my whole plan and I can't start my car. My probation officer sends me a letter. I go in to see her and she says, look, you clearly have a problem. This is not your first arrest surrounding drugs and alcohol. So, you can either go to jail or go to an IOP and, AA. And I have no idea what IOP is. And you know, like I said, my introduction to AA was, this is group therapy. That's the message they carried. And I have been back there to that meeting, you know, not recently, but within the last year or two. And I've even brought sponsees there. One, like a really awesome moment I had, I took a sponsee to one of those meetings. And, you know, when I'm working with someone, when I'm taking them to meetings, we're going to go to, you know, active, healthy home groups that are in all three legacies. And I was sponsoring this guy named Jonathan. I was like, all right, Jonathan, we're going to go to a little bit different meeting. And I took him there and he was like looking around. He was like, what the hell is this? It was so awesome. I was, you know, very satisfying that, you know, very grateful and satisfying, you know, grateful that I am armed with the facts of my condition, and also satisfying that, you know, not that this is about results, not to make this about me, but, you know, I am grateful that I am able, you know, to new people that haven't found a solution to their problem. I can maybe nudge them in a direction towards God, you know, towards these principles, towards love. Anyway, I go to this IOP and they basically tell me to go to meetings and, you know, I make the decision to stay sober and I meant it and it didn't occur to me that I couldn't do that. It was around July when I started going and my sobriety date was in August. I swore that I would never drink again. I would never drug again. And I found myself still drinking and drugging in between meetings, after meetings, all that type of stuff. When I say in between meetings, not actually drinking and drugging in meetings, but going to a meeting in the morning, going to one at night, that type of deal. My last drunk was the beginning of August. I was going to see a band play, and I just swore. I mean, if you hook me up to a lie detector test, I would have sworn I'm never going to drink again. I would have passed. I meant it. But if I was out, and someone said, "Would you like a beer?" and I said, "Yes, I would." And that night, threw them down and I could not get drunk. I couldn't quiet my mind. And that was my last drunk. I got high like one more time, I think. But anyway, so, you know, when I came into AA in August of 2017, I just threw myself into going to meetings. Because again, the only experience I had with AA was go to a lot of meetings, talk about your problems, all that. So that's kind of, I didn't really talk because I'm terrified of people. My last year of drinking, other than a few close friends, I didn't let people really close to me. So I would go into meetings. I would sit in the back reading a book. You know, it's that, like, I really hope someone talks to me, but also I'm really terrified of someone talking to me, you know, that game. Sitting outside away from the crowd, smoking a cigarette, looking at my shoes. You know, I was doing that game. Anyway, so I essentially, when I got sober, I'm so grateful for, you know, the fellowship of AA. It is not going to allow me to have a spiritual experience. It's not going to keep me sober long term, but it definitely, there's a lot of power here. And essentially I just started going to 3-4 meetings a day, you know, and maybe for 30 seconds in the meeting, I didn't think about drinking, you know, and I chased that. I didn't get a sponsor right away. I was kind of looking around, feeling it out. But a guy showed interest in me. And he didn't want anything from me, which I thought was weird, you know. I honestly, I'm so self-centered, I thought he was hitting on me. Not at all what was happening, but, you know, I mean, I remember the first guy that ever reached out to me, he chased me down in the parking lot, and he gave me his number, and he was really struggling with sobriety at that time. However, he taught me a valuable lesson. We don't have to be very well or have a lot of to offer to be of service to others. He said, I'm going to be at this meeting that night, and I went to that meeting, and I felt a little bit more connected. I went to, you know, he invited me to a really healthy meeting, and I heard, you know, I started to begin to hear my story. So I eventually get a sponsor at around 30 days sober, and we start going through the big book. And I am so eternally grateful for that man. He saved my life. I've had three sponsors, one relapse. My first sponsor, very different, does things slightly different than the way that I do them. And that's awesome. We all, you know, there's different flavors of AA. I mean, he uses the big book. He's a huge big book guy. I mean, he saved my life. He got me talking to God. He got me writing an inventory. He helped me to understand what alcoholism was, all of that stuff. And he helped me to have a spiritual experience. When I was around 3 months sober, though, one story I'll throw out there. I was mainly going to late night meetings. Not that there's anything wrong with them. I mean, I've been to some awesome ones, you know, but meetings that weren't really literature based. It was kind of just pick a topic. I remember at 3 months sober, I went to a meeting at Chippenham Hospital. A lot of y'all know Sammy G. Keystone is her home group. And I went to this meeting, and, you know, it's so funny, you know, God will use whatever it takes to get the job done. There was a newcomer. I was flirting with a non-conference approved person and was convinced he was the one. And I picked him up from his sober house. Mind you, I don't have a real license. I'm breaking the law. I'm not telling my sponsor what I'm doing. So, you know, not really living principled. So I picked this guy up and we're kind of hanging out, whatever. And you know, I was like, I got paranoid that maybe we would get pulled over. And I was like, maybe we should go to an AA meeting because God forbid something happens. We can at least say, you know, you got your meeting sheet. I got mine. We have proof, whatever. So I go to the Keystone group. And what happened was that was the first time in an AA meeting where a woman shared in a general way what it, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what she was like now. She shared, you know, page 29 tells us, you know, why we share our story. She shared how she found a power greater than herself and what that had done for her in her life. It was like the most serenity I had experienced sober in a long, it's sober for sure, but the most serenity I had experienced in years, you know, to hear this woman talk about the empty, you know, the hole in the soul. The not feeling a part of, and she was gay. And I was like, hell yeah, this is like a sign from God. And I, you know, I began to have little moments. I mean, Carl Jung talks about them, you know, synchronicity. I began to have little moments like that, just woven together that, you know, now hindsight, I know it was the loving hand of God, nudging me in a direction, in the right direction. Also, with the willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness needed, and you know, taking the action, because at the end of the day, I wanted to stay sober, you know, but that want, that need is not enough for an alcoholic of my type. I had to find a sufficient substitute, and that for me has been treating alcoholism with the spiritual experience. So, you know, my sponsor took me through the steps. Now he does it a little bit slower than I do. I like to go pretty quickly. But I began to have an experience. I started helping people. I met a woman at around that 3 month period of sobriety. I was going nuts at 3 months sober. I don't even think I was in inventory yet. It was, like I said, a little slowly through the big book. That's what his sponsor passed on to him. He had 6 years sober. He was happy, joyous, and free. I'm not judging that. I'm just saying that's what he passed on to me. And it obviously worked. That's what I needed. That's what God gave me. I was the only person he was sponsoring, so I could call him and just vomit every day for an hour, you know? He was able to give me a lot of time, and that's what I needed. I don't know if I would have been sober. My second sponsor was a man named Danny in Baltimore. I don't know if I would have stayed sober going through the steps in 8 hours. I really don't. Anyways, so around 3 months sober, I'm nuts, you know. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I haven't really surrendered yet. I don't want to drink, but I haven't surrendered to a power greater than self. But little things started happening, and one of them was a woman came up to me and said, essentially, you have untreated alcoholism, and you have to start helping people. AA is not a self-help program. It is a help others program. And that's what I started doing. I threw out a prayer. I was at a pizza shop, and a friend of mine blew me off. So I'm sitting in this restaurant all by myself, and which was the, you know, I couldn't imagine at that time anything worse than being alone in a restaurant without a book or anything. I was like, oh my God, everyone here is judging me. It was like at a pizza place in downtown Richmond at 9. Everyone in there was drunk, you know. I was just waiting for a meeting to open at like 10 or something or 11. So I go to this meeting that I don't normally go to, and I met this guy, and or this guy started sharing. And at this time, I'm not really talking to people other than my sponsor. I would only go to the meetings that he was going to. And I would hang out away from the group until I saw him, and I would run in. Definitely fearful of people for a long time. It wasn't until I started helping people that that went away. And I didn't have much. I just said, hey, this is what's been working for me. This has been a really good meeting. I like this one. Do you want to meet me here? Do you want to get coffee? Just little things like that. But what happened was this guy was at a meeting, and he looked nothing like me. I mean, completely grew up very different, you know. But he talked about, you know, he was like 2 days sober, something like that. He drank just like I drank, though. So I ended up, something inside of me said, go talk to this guy. And I did. And ended up talking to him. And after the meeting, I was like, let's go to another meeting. So we got in his car and he drove me, you know, I told him where the next meeting was. And, you know, he said to me, he was like, I don't even know you. I don't know why you talked to me, but I was planning on killing myself tonight. And if you hadn't talked to me, I was planning on just booking it from this meeting. You know, this was just a last ditch effort. He is not sober today. It broke my heart when he drank again. He was like one of my first friends in AA. But I stayed sober. I grew closer to God. I grew in effectiveness and understanding of the spiritual life. And from that moment on, my world has never been the same. I mean, if you want to see the power of God, find a newcomer and take their hand and put it in the hand of God. It is truly the greatest gift that has ever been given to me, is these principles. And then, you know, someone showed me how to help others have an experience. You know, then I met a man at around 9 months sober in Baltimore, and I was at a conference, and he spoke about the steps in a way that I had never heard anyone speak about the steps. You know, when I started to wake up and started working with people, I went a little excessive, and in some ways I probably am. You know, I was, my sponsor, you know, he works with two guys at a time. And, you know, I'm like 8-9 months sober. I'm sponsoring like 8 or 9 women, men and women. And, you know, we're kind of having a little bit of disagreement over that, which is fine. I mean, everyone has their own path. I mean, I sponsor people that sponsor a ton of people. I sponsor people that sponsor like 1 or 2. So, you know, we're all built differently. You know, we all have a role to play in AA. But ultimately, this is about a life of service. Being of service to alcoholics and being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I met a man who really helped me share these principles with other people. And again, he saved my life. He really helped me to understand alcoholism on the spiritual level. He helped me to understand sober alcoholism, untreated alcoholism. He helped me to he gave me awesome experience with working with the newcomers, you know, things that worked, things that didn't work, and encouraged me to get really busy, you know, passing this message along. As he was like, essentially, Nathan, he said to me one day, Nathan, if you're anything like me, I mean, your life absolutely depends on your constant thought of others. I mean, I know it comes from the Big Book, but and just constantly trying to carry this message with a lot of people. I'm not going to lie, it used to bother me. And I hope this doesn't sound judgmental at all. It used to bother me, you know, that there were people that could maybe go to one meeting a week. they're real alcoholics and they're fine. And I'm, you know, going to meetings and I'm constantly working with newcomers and all that stuff. And I used to call Danny and just be like, it's not fair. They're not really alcoholics. And he'd be like, Nathan, you are so judgmental. Some of us are just sicker than others, you know? And if you are making this about what you're getting, you are in friction with these principles and you need to be careful because you will start drinking the newcomer like beer. And that's in some ways what started to happen. That sponsor actually was on his way out the door. Stopped answering his phone, this, that, and the other, and drank, and it has been heartbreaking. Just struggling to stay physically sober. And that's when I met Valerie at my home group, which was Safe Crackers at the time. And you know, she talked about sponsoring 26 women at one time and drowning. And I was like, oh my God, that's me. So it's essentially not being sponsored. So I sat on her number. I don't know why asking someone to sponsor you is like asking them out on a date. I mean, asking this, you know, this woman to sponsor me. I went over to her apartment and I went into the bathroom and prayed beforehand. And this wasn't new. You know, I'd done it before. And I asked her to sponsor me. And, you know, she took me through the big book and just really helped me to reconcile my experience with the big book. Really helped me to understand the directions in there. And really helped me to become even more effective at carrying this message to others. I'm almost running out of time. I'm still doing the Zoom talks is still a weird thing. I've only done it a few times. And I always feel like I've been talking way too much about drinking when I'm doing the Zoom thing. So I'll try to just end it with a little bit of hope and just, my experience as I see it. And if there's one thing that I cannot stress enough is that, you know, when I stop drinking, I get worse. And it's not just not drinking is not the solution to my problem. It is absolutely through a relationship with a power greater than self. In some ways, the steps aren't even the solution to my problems. A buddy of mine in AA describes, he asked me one time, he's like, Nathan, if you were dehydrated, what do you need to live? And I was like, water. He was like, absolutely. The steps are like the cup. The water is inside of the cup. The steps are a vessel that allows you to have a spiritual experience, that allows you to get to God. There's a part in the book, I forget where it is, but it says alcohol was the boon that got us to God. B-O-O-N, and it means instrument. So this relationship with the power greater than self, this spiritual experience, maintaining that, growing in effectiveness and understanding is the solution to this problem that I have. And I don't suffer today. I enjoy my alcoholism. I wouldn't want to be anything but an alcoholic. So if you are new, I beg you to find someone. There's a lot of awesome people in this group, and ask them how they've had a spiritual experience. You know, ask them, have you had a spiritual experience through this practice of the steps? And if they say, hell yeah, they're the one for you. And, you know, sobriety has not always been easy. You know, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, the last few months have been crazy and all this stuff and adjusting and had some, you know, some personal stuff. But at the end of the day, I put my head on the pillow and I know it's going to be okay. I know that I am okay. I know the source of my happiness does not rely on anything out here. I find it within. It's a great reality that is deep within me. It's just a matter of living a life of service to the best of my ability, not taking my thinking too seriously. You know, I love what Bob Darrell says. I'm in a constant state of threat assessment. You know, the more I'm future tripping and thinking about myself, there's, you know, usually some inventory or something to write or need to go help someone or this, that, and the other. But I don't want to die today or anymore. You know, I am genuinely hopeful for my future. I still don't know what God's will is for my life. I'm trusting though, if I live by these principles and just try to be a giver instead of taker and try to the best of my ability to help as many people as I can. And if I can't help to not cause harm, and if I can stay in that humble place of, you know, sobriety, I'm going to be okay. And God will continue to present himself to me. So I'm going to shut up there because I don't want to go over. There's nothing worse than that. So I want to thank the group so much for having me. I love this group. I'm bummed I can't be there with y'all, but grateful I got to be of service here. So thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. It's a fine example of experience, strength, and hope. Everyone has the ability to unmute and say thanks if you'd like.
Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you very much, Nathan.
Thank you, Nathan.
That was great.
Great job.
Thank you, Nathan.
Awesome, Nathan.
Thanks, Nathan.
You're welcome, everyone. I heard Morgan's voice in the middle of all that. Thank you all so much.
Right on. All right. The seventh tradition states that every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our group does contribute to the service structure, District 14, AA Virginia, Tidewater Intergroup, and AA World Services. The PayPal link is in the chat. Do as you see fit with it. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Your safety is important. Calling the proper authorities does not go against any AA traditions and is recommended when someone may have broken the law or endangered the safety of another person. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? Grant.
I'm Grant, I'm an alcoholic. A couple things, our home group here has been hosting a wonderful speaker and Ask a Basket series on Sunday night. This coming Sunday, we have Danny B from Houston, Texas. Please come out and join us at 7 o'clock. It'll be a speaker for an hour and then a half hour Ask a Basket after that. It's been pretty great so far and hope to see you there. Additionally, I got word that West Ghent is going to continue to have their anniversary meeting on the 22nd of July and the Zoom format, and their speaker is Marion from Boca Raton, Florida. So I actually heard her speak at another meeting a couple weeks ago. She's phenomenal. So come out and join them. It'll be their regular meeting time on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock on the 22nd. Thanks.
Thanks, Grant. Yeah, I hear Danny next Sunday gives the funniest AA talk anyone's ever heard ever. So there's that. Oh, and Nathan, we're going to ask you questions for another half an hour, so stick around. Just kidding. Any other announcements for the good of AA?
Tim, alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
Hi. Just wanted to let everyone know that a meeting has reopened in Suffolk. The Tuesday 12:30 11th step meeting that meets at Westminster Church on Route 10 has reopened. So if you're looking for a prayer and med meeting in the afternoon, there is one available.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right, the Simple Actions group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available. I'm reading the in-person meeting format. You guys know that I don't know what I'm doing. I was just about to say that I'll be at the table right here after we close the meeting. Come talk to me. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. We're going to hang out in the room afterwards. Whoo. So thank everyone who participated. And we'll just do the Lord's Prayer. It's 8 o'clock. And then we can hang out and thank Nathan again afterwards. So for those who choose, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Love you, Nathan.
I love you.